Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to RNIB Tech Talk. It's Hubert Pavelkovich here in for Callum Stoneman this week. This is your technology show. This is where we talk all things, well, believe it or not, technology, from the accessible to the inaccessible, from the fascinating to the frustrating. We want to hear all about it because, well, this is your show. We want to hear from you, the technology users themselves. How to get in touch? Well, as always, it's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's the magical email address you need to get in touch, and we will be looking through your emails, certainly. But let's go to this week's show. This week, we are rounding up the best technology, accessible, yeah, or otherwise, or some of the unusual indeed, to come out of the 2026 Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas with Steve Tyler. We'll be catching up with the team at Nibble Nerds, great name, to hear about their Viewpoint screen reader and their range of accessible games. Plus, I will be taking the Blind Square app for a bit of a spin and show you some of its popular functions. That's Tech Talk this week. Joining me is Jackie Brown. Jackie, how are you? What's on the tech radar this week? What's new?
Well, for me, in our house, it's been, I suppose you would describe it as the week of the watches, because I purchased a couple of weeks ago, right at the start of the year, I bought an Apple Watch, my first Apple Watch, I might add. I had always resisted the idea of having one because I just didn't think I needed one. I probably still don't, actually, but it's surprising how useful something is when you start using it. So I got my first Apple Watch, the SE3, and I really like it, to be honest. And then my husband, who is an Android user, he decided he got an offer from Google to buy the Pixel 4 watch, and there was quite a bit off it. So he said, well, I'll try it. I'll give it a spin. So it's been the week of the watches in our house, sort of comparing them, what they do well, what they don't do, what they could do, all that sort of stuff. But it has been actually quite good fun. But we've both decided that they do have their uses. So that's what we've been doing.
One question I do have, because obviously, you know, you have, as you said, resisted to get the Apple Watch for quite a while. What finally convinced you to actually go, well, I actually want to get it?
The first Apple Watch I ever saw, and the last one I ever saw, was the first version. So you're going back quite a way, at least 10 years. And I thought it was big. I didn't like it. I thought, I don't want this big thing on my wrist. My wrists are fairly slim, and I didn't want this big thing on my wrist. So I never bothered looking at it after that. And I'd heard people using them. I've been in a room where fellow users have had their watches, and I thought, oh, I don't really know. Would you pay all that money on top of a phone for a watch? But I was talking to a friend of mine over the Christmas holiday, and he was sort of extolling the virtues of his Apple Watch that he'd recently bought. And I thought, well, you know what, I'll research it a bit and give it a go. So I did. I actually spent quite a lot of time reading about it, reviews, how accessible it was, the sort of things I could do with it. And I just decided, look, I'll just go for it. So that's not for any specific reason, but when I do go to Scotland, I often don't have my phone in my pocket when I'm with the children. I normally leave my phone safely upstairs out of their reach because they see the phone and they want a shot of it. So I thought this would be quite useful to have my watch on my person, but not necessarily my phone, keep it away out of little sticky hands. And yeah, so that was one of the reasons. But I do like getting the notifications and just tapping me every so often to stand up, you've been sitting too long, things like that, really. And well, Martin really likes his watch. He says that the notifications are really handy, just to look at those on your wrist instead of, you know, reaching for your phone and all that. So they don't sound as if they're great reasons for buying them, but we like them now we have.
The way I see it, as long as it works for you. I mean, for me, I love it. I love the access to notifications. I love the fitness feature because they actually encourage me to exercise more.
Yeah.
And I like the ability to send a message without kind of having to go to my phone when I get a message, you know. And I also like the ability to control music playback so that voiceover doesn't interrupt when I'm changing tracks on my phone. I could do it all on the watch, so the music playback is uninterrupted. And the other thing I like, sometimes it's a good little microphone as well to have on a voice recorder.
Yeah.
Phone calls, jury's out on phone calls on the watch. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. I don't really use it for that, but I do. Nowadays, I don't know what I'd do without my watch, to be fair. So, yeah, welcome to the Apple Watch Club, Jackie. always good to have people join. For me, despite my skepticism, and I think I probably am not the only one with the whole skepticism of the brand new Siri. But Apple have announced and partnered with Google, and they will use some of the Google Gemini models to support functions of the brand new Siri. So something's clearly happening. It's slowly reassuring me that actually we might get an improved Siri this year, which I think, I don't know about you, Jackie, I think it massively needs it because I think it's very much behind other digital assistants. Compare it to Google Assistant, compare it to Amazon's smart assistant. You know, it just needs a lot of work to even try and catch up.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's ironic in a way that Apple, when they first announced their Apple Intelligence, I wasn't wowed by it, to be honest, when it came out. I don't think it's as good as Apple are claiming it is. And I think now a lot of people are saying the same thing. If you read the main press, you know, a lot of people think that it's got a long way to go. And it hasn't surprised me to read that announcement in the last week or so that they are going to team up and do a lot more to do with Gemini, because for me, of all the AI bots and assistants there are, I think Gemini personally is far way above the rest of them. I would say I really like Gemini. I have an Android phone, and I like the way that Gemini is built into the Pixel phones. I think that's, you know, on the iPhone you have to go into Gemini, into the app, unless there's some way that you could force it to be your default system, your assistant, but I don't think you can. So I really am glad to see that Apple are on board with this, and it's ironic after all their boasting about Apple Intelligence that they've actually called upon Google for help, if you like.
I think it's also using what already exists. You might, if there's something else that already exists that can help, then I think using it is much more practical than trying to come up with a thing of your own. And I think all I will say for Apple Intelligence, to give it a bit of a nod, is Apple have gone with a very subtle approach to implementing AI features, where they are there, but they are not kind of in your face. They are subtly doing certain things, such as the writing tools, such as message summaries, such as, you know, recommendations of apps that in widgets like the Siri suggestions widget. I think Apple's intelligence features, they are not, you know, glowing and amazing, but I do also think that they are subtly there doing things. The only difference is, and why people aren't really talking about them, is because they're not very much in your face. They are subtle. So they are there, and I have noticed various traces of them doing little things, but in a subtle fashion that it's not really in your face. So you don't talk about it because you don't really see it in action that much, but it is there.
True.
Well, there's plenty to come this week. Stick around with us. It's another Tech Talk. Now on RNIB Tech Talk, it's time to talk CES. Yes, the Consumer Electronics Show, which every year brings various interesting technology news stories, whether it's you know, the promised potential, or whether it's sometimes some of the more interesting things. There's always something for everybody, and there's always so much happening, so it's always good to kind of get a roundup of some of the interesting things. Joining us to talk about this, Director of Assistive Technology at Leonard Cheshire, Steve Tyler. Steve, thank you for joining us.
No problem, and thanks for inviting me.
So CES, as always, has, you know, there's plenty of mainstream technology, but there's always various assistive or technology or accessibility related tech bits happening as well. Can you give me some of the highlights of what particularly stood out for you?
Well, starting with some of the accessibility stuff that maybe our audience would be most interested in, two Braille developments, which I think are worth watching. As your listeners will know, at the consumer show, sometimes people kind of float ideas. They're never going to see the light of day, but they're testing to see whether or not people like it. And then right at the other end of the spectrum, you've got nearly launched products. They're showing and telling to get marketing and awareness and so on. These fall into the latter category, so these are definitely going to launch. One is made by Dot Incorporated. For those of you who know Dot, they make Braille display technology. They started off with a thing called the Dot Watch, and then they've made Braille display technology ever since with access to graphical information and so on. They've made a portable Dymo labeler, which is an app-driven device. So the idea is you tell it as a sighted or visually impaired individual what you want it to produce in Braille, and it produces it in Braille either on Dymo tape, sort of plastic Dymo tape, or on metal tape. So easy way of labeling. And the nice thing is, of course, a sighted person can do it as well as a VI person, as long as they've got access to a smartphone. And then the second one may be worth mentioning is a thing called Pocket Braille. It's trying to tackle the idea, I suppose, of portability and something that comes around with you if you're an iPhone or Android user. iPhone is definitely covered at this stage, not yet with Android, but it's a kind of battery pack style device. And you pull out the device at the bottom of your phone, and it's an 8-cell Braille display. Very portable, very smart. They're looking for crowdfunding, and it looks like they're also looking for partners to bring it to market. There's a growing accessibility kind of agenda at CES, where innovation showcased, in especially around inclusivity and so on. And to that end, we're seeing lots and lots of not so much unique development, but things that are becoming accessible, which for whatever reason more recently been ignored. One that sticks out for me, I think, by a company called Raonark, Raonark, and they make smart locks. So these are the kind of locks which you can attach to your front door or attach to existing locks, but now they're electronic and you can control them in various ways. Well, their one claims to be accessible. There's a new robot called XSTO. Who comes up with these things? I have no idea. But XSTO, and it's a multi-terrain mobility robot assistant. Now, it's not entirely clear what it's going to offer. And I should say at this point, there are a lot of robotics at the show this year, not just around accessibility, but more generally. I mean, just think robot everything. You know, robots that will, I mean, there's one, for example, that got a lot of the headlines, which demonstrates being able to fold your clothes after it's got them out of the washing machine or the tumble dryer, or loading the washing machine and tumble dryer. Takes forever to do it. Not very convincing. And the criticism has come about because a lot of these things were showcased last year, and there doesn't appear to be much development. As it turns out, that robotics stuff really highlights something that a lot of the journalists and so on have picked up on, which is, you know, a lot of us are using things like ChatGPT and Google Gemini. Those of us who are interested in artificial intelligence and so on have been using a lot of these things over the past year, or at least experimenting with them. If nothing else, you're likely to have heard of them. And it's interesting because the things we're using those for are quite difficult for us to do, which is why they're looked upon as amazing improvements. There are some downsides to them too, but improvements. You can summarize things, you can get information very rapidly, you can make sure your document looks visually appealing, and so on and so on. The story goes on. So they're things that we normally find difficult, time consuming, brain challenging, and that's why we like them. And at the other end of the spectrum, there are the robots, which are armed with AI. And as it turns out, those things that we don't particularly find challenging, like walking up the stairs, making sure we stay balanced, in general, as biological human beings, those things are not even conscious. We just do it. We're designed to do it, or from as an organism and so on. Robots, though, find it incredibly difficult to do. Those things that we find incredibly easy to do, they find very hard. And it's very hard to get that right. And scientists are really struggling with all that. The other criticism that has been leveled this year has been that some things have been developed. I mean, I mentioned right at the beginning that companies do these things to sort of show off, showcase, get in the headlines, there are lots of multiple reasons why they do it. But one of the criticisms have been, well, you've invested an awful lot of time in robotics, but some of it really is very pointless. So a good example of that is, at the moment, a not very efficient robot that pushes a vacuum cleaner around. And the obvious question is, well, why don't you just make the vacuum cleaner smart? I mean, there are enough of them. And indeed, there are some of those. There is a sort of vacuum cleaner cum robot, which is shown vacuuming the stairs and climbing the stairs as it does it. So, there are lots of these odd mixes of things.
It sounds like almost overcomplicating something that doesn't need to be overcomplicated.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah. There appear to be a range of products out there where you think, well, okay, not quite seeing where that would fit in my life, but I mean, there you are.
Going back to the Braille label, I've seen a few of these kind of Braille labelers being talked about, which could actually work with an app. Question I have, do we know anything about when it's going to launch or how much it's going to cost?
The Dymo labeler, not sure how much it's going to cost, but the intention is that it will be launched at CSUN, which comes up in the middle of March.
Have you heard of, is it called Power Keys from Clicks, this little keyboard?
Indeed. Well, I mentioned the idea of the sort of battery pack thing, the back of your iPhone, and then pulling out a Braille display, and there you are. Power Keys is not dissimilar to that. In fact, there are a couple of these types of products. Again, whether they see the light of day or not, not sure, but they are, some of them are QWERTY based keyboards, so regular kind of keyboards. Some of them are a little bit cut down, so they have a small number of keys which do multiple things. But in any event, there's quite a push for, in short, people, I think, are getting a bit fed up with touch screens. Sometimes it's kind of nice to have a solid hardware keyboard that will enable you to either input information or very rapidly navigate. And that's not just an accessibility thing, that's for sighted users too. And so there's quite a focus there on how can we make products that we're that give different ways of accessing your smart devices. Just as a general trend, it's worth noting the so-called Gen Z generation, so the younger generation, are actually looking back at some of the old technology. And bizarrely, I mean, you will have seen, I don't know, the re-emergence of LPs on vinyl. Well, Similar things are happening in the technology community. So the original so-called T9 keyboard, in other words, the number keyboard, the number keypads that were on things like Nokia phones and Ericsson phones and things like that, are coming back. People appear to like them, and there's a sort of yearning to bring them back.
What other highlights have you got from CES? Anything else that stood out to you?
I suppose I should mention the wheel move, which is kind of interesting, unusual, and genuinely beneficial. It's a for wheelchair users, it attaches your manual wheelchair very effectively, very efficiently, and turns it into a powered wheelchair. It's a battery pack with a motor, very easy to attach, and basically turns your manual wheelchair into a product that can travel at 15 miles an hour. The other thing that everybody will be interested in, so the side note on this, Waymo. So Waymo, autonomous vehicles. So lots and lots of speculation about, cars that drive themselves and when will we have them? Well, the short answer to when will we have them, first iteration in the UK at least, will be sometime in March or April, appearing somewhere near us in London. And certainly that will be the beginning of the delivery of those. And I think some people are viewing it with a bit of trepidation, some people with excitement. We'll see what happens. But Waymo were demonstrating their latest autonomous vehicles and capabilities, what they call level four autonomy. So still not driverless, without intervention at all, but pretty good. The challenge for, well, cities like London and a lot of our cities in the UK, especially, unlike in the US, where you have some cities based on things like, a grid pattern, where it's relatively straightforward. There's a uniformity about the street layout and how streets are kind of put together and the city is put together. So, yes, of course, you need to have a lot of capability there. But in terms of navigation, it's relatively easy. Somewhere like London or Edinburgh, or it's all over the place. Old streets, all kinds of surfaces, unusual pedestrian areas, really much more complicated. What they're hoping is it will be fine. And the reason they confidently are saying that is because one of the cities they've tried it out in is Tokyo, and they've made it work, at least to an extent there. So we will see. But it's coming to the UK this year. Lots of in-car concepts, lots of entertainment concepts, lots of keyless entry. So open door, you're identified by your iPhone or your Android device as you approach your car. So you don't need to worry about boring historic things like car keys. Smart glasses, very big, but mainly driven by virtual reality and gaming. So we're seeing a lot of smart glasses which overlay reality. So you might be playing a game, or you might be, you've got a screen in the glasses and you're carrying these things around on your head. Some of them are massive. I mean, think more like, I don't know, a cycle helmet with big lenses on the front, right through to very, very miniature. Like the Meta glasses, very small. So the latest Meta glasses on show, these are screen-based glasses. So there's a when I say screen, it's actually a projected image on one of the lenses. So what it does is lets you use them as glasses. If you have prescriptions, you can have your prescription lens in there. But it's also capable of projecting images. So the kind of clever stuff it can do for people with enough sight to use them are you can be, I don't know, get simultaneous translation in text. So you can be talking to somebody and what's and they can be speaking in a different language and you're seeing that happen. Audio description becomes a completely different proposition, for example, or watching films. Which are in different languages. So lots of sort of developments in glasses and artificial intelligence, bringing with it challenges. So people are getting a little bit awkward about this, and the primary reason for that is How do I know what you're recording? A lot of these things have cameras built into them. You can tell if you look very closely, there's a little flashing light or a little indicator if you look really carefully, and especially if you're not in sunlight where you wouldn't be able to see it anyway. But people are getting a bit edgy on this, where images are being recorded, or whole video clips are being recorded of somebody, and you might not even know it's happening. And I'm seeing it actually happening in my own area, where Lena Cheshire, we deal with people with very different types of disability, and we've tried out monitoring technologies there, and people are fine with things like movement detection and things like that, but they get much more nervous when you start talking about cameras. Things like, I don't know, unusual, weird hybrid things. So last year we saw a lot of hearing aid manufacturers emerging from headset manufacturers. So they realized that they could deliver, they knew a thing or two about audio quality and making things more listenable. So they started straying into the hearing aid market, and the other way round too, bizarrely. So hearing aid manufacturers started producing headphones, but headphones that you could control really well, so that they could maximize and make your audio, if you had any, even more beneficial. This year, we're seeing things like headphones, which you can wear as a headset, but then turn in the opposite direction to your head, and they become a set of speakers. Other unusual things, there's the L'Oreal light straightener. So this is rather than so those of you who are interested in these things will know that quite often, so you can straighten your hair using heaters to do that. And that's the traditional way. So you heat, and the danger of it is, of course, you damage your hair doing it over prolonged periods and so on. Well, L'Oreal have produced one which doesn't require that. It uses infrared light to straighten your hair. Neurable have made a headset with brain reading capability. So over the past couple of years, there have been things like playing games with your mind. So I've seen and in fact engaged in, my children have engaged in air hockey, where one of you is at one end of the table, the other is at the other. You've got a cushion of air holding up the ball, and with a little attachment to your to the lobe of your ear, and a little bit of calibration where it understands what your brainwave patterns are doing, you can think the ball towards your opponent, and you can literally push it by thinking, pushing that ball away from me. And of course, your opponent is pushing that ball towards you, or trying to, or moving it to the left to try and escape you. Well, that calibration thing has gone away now. You don't need to spend lots of time doing that. Instead, you can get the neurable headphones. You don't have a weird attachment on your earlobe or anything like that. The headphones begin to read some of your brainwave patterns. Primarily, this is coming out of the gaming community, and you can begin to control gaming more effectively with additional brain capability. And this is really the sort of beginning of all of that, and we'll watch as that happens. And then one final one for you, which is a kind of interesting fashion slash who knows, Neurologic. And Neurologic have developed a smart mirror. So it measures the level of health by looking at your skin complexion. So by looking at your face, it can begin to measure things like blood flow and a whole host of other information that can extract and then give you health readings. Lots and lots of stuff there.
Smart mirrors. What in the world will be smartened up by technology next? I have to say, the brain, using brainwaves to play air hockey sounds quite fascinating. Plenty of interesting things there. I think there's a lot of things that you've mentioned that we will definitely be following more closely here on R&IB Tech Talk. But there you go. That is CES. Or at least some of it, I'd say, from 2026. I think we'd be here for a very long time if we mentioned everything. But there was many other things, including, you know, what everyday device can we turn into a wireless charger, which I've seen as well. So plenty of interesting things. As always, Steve Tyler, Director of Assistive Technology at Leonard Cheshire, thank you very much for rounding up some of the assistive, mainstream, usual and rather unusual technologies from CES 2026 here on R&IB Tech Talk.
We talk quite a bit here on Tech Talk about accessible gaming, and it's always nice to learn more about games that are out there that are accessible, and of course hear from the developers as well. And I'm joined now by Braden Robinson from Nibble Nerds. Braden, welcome to Tech Talk. Do you want to tell us a bit about you and a bit about Nibble Nerds to start us off?
Sure, thank you. So I'm completely blind, and honestly, I've been doing gaming in general for quite a few years now, and I got interested in developing games and learned programming, and I eventually started working on my first project, which was actually, it was called Wave of the Undead, and one of the things I wanted to do in that game was make it accessible, fully playable by a blind person, but also make it have graphics that are good enough for a sighted person to play, because my brother is completely sighted, and if you've ever tried to get a sighted person to play an audio game, it usually does not go well. So I put graphics in there eventually, and that's kind of what got me started and why Nibble Nerds really exists. That was kind of the goal for a while.
It's interesting you say that, because I've had the exact same thing, like with sighted people's, you know, sighted friends or family members, that a lot of them, they don't mind playing audio games, but they kind of lose interest eventually. And I suppose you can kind of see why when you look at the games that are out there. Is that a bit of a tough balance to get right, like making it accessible, but also making it playable for sighted people, and, you know, not just playable, but kind of look good and look appealing and be the same as what else, you know, everything else that's out there, if that makes sense?
It can be. I mean, it depends on the type of game. In the case of Wave of the Undead, that was just a single player project, so I didn't really have to think too hard about what I could and couldn't put in the graphics. Am I giving one side an advantage? How am I going to offset the balance of the game? I didn't have to think about that. So it was kind of just, oh, I added a feature, let me visualize that in some way, shape, or form. I mean, me doing the graphics blind is painful.
Yeah.
And I basically had to, every 2 seconds, ask my brother, hey, does this look good? Because I don't know. And I actually had my cousin do the graphics for the game, because he, at that time, was doing art. And so made my life a whole lot easier. I mean, when you move into multiplayer games, things get a whole lot more complicated because you have advantage and stuff. But in the single player area, it's not that difficult. At least I didn't find it to be very difficult.
And the game that you've got at the minute that you're working on and that's out there is Blades of Glory. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Sure. So Blades of Glory is I struggle to give it a genre, but I call it a multiplayer melee combat game. The idea is you're running around an arena, swinging swords, axes, hammers, you name it. You can kill another players, or you can go in and kill mythical creatures in our other game mode, the Temple of Legends. And that one does also have graphics, although they are nowhere near as good as the ones in Wave of the Undead, because we don't have a graphics designer anymore, unfortunately. But my brother does play it. And somehow he does pretty good, so it's kind of cool to be able to play a multiplayer game with my brother. That was kind of the end goal, and it worked, and that's really fun.
Yeah, fair enough, as long as it works. So what platforms are these games available on?
Unfortunately, they're only on Windows right now. I do not have plans to move them because that would be an absolute pain, but they do run on Windows. Everything I create runs on Windows.
And are they self-voicing, or do you need a screen reader as well, or can it work either way?
If you turn them on and you don't have your screen reader running, then it'll self-voice, but it will go through the screen reader if you're running your screen reader. So you can do it either way.
Okay, very nice. One of the other apps that you've been working on as well is Viewpoint, and this is very interesting because it's a little bit different to the games that you've got out there.
Yeah, so Viewpoint is not a game at all, actually. I call it an AI-powered screen reader assistant because the general idea behind it is to run with your screen reader. I have it running in the background right now, actually. It doesn't bother my screen reader, but whenever I need it, I can pull it up. And its main purpose is to allow me to access any form of app, really, or website that my screen reader cannot use correctly. So if I'm pressing tab and it's not going anywhere, which happens unfortunately all too often,
Quite a lot,
I can pull up Viewpoint and it basically, in the UI mode anyway, overrides navigation and uses AI to find the UI elements so it can work with anything because it forces the mouse to where it needs to go.
So as well as being able to give you a description of what's on your screen, or maybe be able to fix the button labels of inaccessible links or buttons that we all come across, it can take actions as well, or at least help you take actions.
Essentially, yeah, you activate the UI mode. There's like four different modes to it, but the UI mode's the main idea behind it. And you activate it, and it lists all the buttons. And if you press enter on one of them, it actually will move the mouse to it and click on it for you. And there's all sorts of tricks you can use to right click or even drag stuff now. So it lets you interact with it.
Now, you mentioned the UI mode, but you mentioned there's a few other modes as well. Can you tell us a bit about those just briefly?
Yeah, so you have OCR mode, which is just AI powered OCR. You use it and it tells you all the text on the screen. And when I say all of the text, I mean all of the text. So not only does it give you what you're looking for, but it also gives you everything else. But it is a nice, useful thing if NVDA's OCR, for example, is not doing its job, which is pretty common. You have the query mode. This is probably my favorite because it lets you ask a question about the screen. You can activate it and ask it, I don't know, what is the background of this? Or you can even ask it things like find the contact link, for example, and it will basically interface with UI mode and combine the two. And you can have it find things that even UI mode won't find normally. So that's my favorite mode of all of them. And then you have the PDF reader, which is specifically designed to deal with scanned PDFs that everybody does not like. So it'll just grab all the text out of there and show it to you.
I'm curious what made you go down this route from, you said you started out developing games and well, still develop games, of course, but these are quite different areas, gaming and an AI assistant, AI screen reader assistant. What made you go down this route?
So the reason, honestly, the Viewpoint is there is because I created it and released it. Honestly, the discovery of Viewpoint, or the possibility for it, was a complete accident. I was reading documentation on Gemini's image recognition capabilities for a completely different purpose, and I came across the fact that it could tell me where things are on the screen, and I'm like, "Huh, what if I use that?" And sure enough, it worked, albeit not very well. But as the AI improved, it got better, and I decided this is something people could benefit from. And so I polished it up and released it. I didn't really think too much about the fact that it wasn't related to my game stuff. I thought people need this, so it's out there.
So in terms of like how this works, so this is using the Google Gemini service, is using one of their models.
Yeah, it actually lets you pick which model it uses. The newest models are integrated in there now and they work quite well, but you can also use some of the older models. We've had to drop support for some because they stopped working, but it does use Google Gemini in various forms of it.
And is there a cost to this, to Viewpoint?
Not directly. Google gives you a free tier on the API because you do have to supply your own API key, which is pretty easy. We have documentation that tells you how to do it. The program itself is free, and the API gives you some free requests every day. But if you want to extend that, you have to pay Google because Google does Google things.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. And what about the games that are available, from Nibble Nerds? Is there a cost to those as well?
There is not. Everything on our website as of now is completely free.
Okay. And if people want to give these games a go or give Viewpoint a go, or if they want to get in contact, how can they do that? Where can they find you?
Everything is on nibblenerds.com. That is NIBBLENERDS.com. There's links to all the software there, and there's even a contact link. So that's all available.
Great name, by the way. I've got to ask, where did the name come from?
Another funny story. I was reading something a while back, and it was about memory in a computer, and it was talking about how 8 bits makes up 1 byte and what happens if you have 4 bits. Well, the joke is it's a nibble. And I'm like, what if I take that and turn it into a company name? And that's what I did.
I like it. Yeah, very nice. Well, there you go, nibblenerds.com if you want to give Viewpoints or if you want to give any of their games a go. I'm certainly going to be trying out Viewpoint after this. Braden Robinson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Now on RNIB Tech Talk, it's time to talk navigation apps or apps to explore your surroundings at least. So we've often talked about Voice Vista here on Tech Talk, which is quite a popular app to allow you to explore your surroundings using 3D audio, which basically means that you will hear where places are in relation to the direction they're coming from. So as an example, if the shop you are walking past is on your left, you will hear it in your left ear if you're wearing headphones, which ideally you need to for 3D audio, or if a shop is on your right, you will hear it in your right ear, for example. That's the basic front of it. Today, we will show you another app that allows you to explore your surroundings. The app I'm talking about is Blind Square. Now, this app has been around for quite a few years, from what I remember. I first got it in 2016, so about 10 years ago or so. Now, to mention, before we actually show you this app, it's a paid app. It is £39.99 at the moment, so not the cheapest compared to free apps that do something similar. Some people may say it is quite expensive. However, I think the whole point of this demonstration is to show you kind of what is out there and the options that you have to choose from, because certain app interfaces work better than others for different people. So it's good to know what's out there. So today I'll give you a brief walkthrough as to what Blind Square offers and show you one particular feature that I, for one, use quite a lot, especially when planning getaways. So let's just dive straight into it, into Blind Square.
Blind Square. Stopping Braille screen input. Opening Blind Square. Blind Square. Search button.
You have only 45% of battery left.
There's Blind Square. Now, it does talk to you in the background as we explore things. It might be doing it throughout this demonstration. And if you have this app open and you're walking, it will keep narrating what's around you, including streets, intersections, points of interest, things like that. Now, although this is quite a big part of the app, that's not what we are going to be focusing on today. All we'll do is show you what the app can do in the simplest way.
Search button.
Fairly self-explanatory. This is where you search for places.
Add place button.
You can add your own places in Blind Square. Now, there's two different ways of doing this. So adding your own place in the Blind Square app will only add it as a point for yourself to use in the app. But if you want other people to use the same landmark, you can add it to the Swarm slash Foursquare platform, which is what Blind Square uses as a database to find its various points of interests. You need their Swarm app and Foursquare apps to add this. This is something we're not going to be covering in this demonstration, but there is an option for you to do that.
Tools, button.
So you've got tools. Now, the good thing is it works quite a simple way. If you double tap on these buttons, you'll get various options. So let's double tap on tools and tell you what is there.
To alert, select action. Look around, button.
So you've got the look around tool. If you turn this on, you can move your phone around in various directions and it will tell you what's around you. Quite simple.
Your location, button.
Your location, again, if you press that, you will be told your location by the app or your nearest address.
Around me, button.
Around you will tell you what places are around you without you having to move your phone. So it might list places within a certain distance, for example, that are around your current location.
Recent places, button.
Recent places, that's kind of like history of the places you've recently looked at.
Nearby intersections, button.
Nearby intersections, quite useful if you're walking and you kind of want to know what streets and street names are nearby.
GPS info, button.
GPS information.
Weather, button.
Weather if you want it.
Braille and history display, button. QR code reader, button.
You've got a QR code reader as well.
Cancel, button.
Cancel, so that's that.
Blind square, add place, tools, for square, button.
Four square, this is where you can actually see what venues are part of the four square platform. Specifically, rather than kind of added via yourself as a Blind Square user.
Other, button.
Other, let's double tap and show you what's in here.
Alert, Blind Square 5.88.
That's version number.
Settings, button.
This is where you can access your settings. In there you can change all sorts of things, including the voice and the speed of the voice that you have working. You can change the units in which distances are read out. You can also change what things Blind Square tells you as you're using it. There's a lot of intricate settings you can use. You can even choose the voices, and there are a lot of voices to choose from kind of the very well-known voices to some more comedic / interesting voices.
Help, button.
Then there's the help section.
About Blind Square, button.
About section.
Give feedback.
You can give them feedback.
Credits, button.
Credits.
Rate application, button.
Rate the app, of course.
Cancel, button.
And the cancel button, so there's that.
Search, add play, tools, for square, other, filter announcements, all, button.
Here's where you can filter. So as you're walking, Blind Square will announce potentially a lot of things depending on what area you're in. And if you want to kind of refine as to what it announces, you can change that. So you can, for example, say you only want to hear the intersections, but you don't really want to hear about other like services like shops or restaurants or anything else. Or maybe you are looking for restaurants in the area, and while you're walking, you only want it to tell you what restaurants are nearby. So you can kind of filter as to how much it tells you, because it can actually talk quite a lot at times. So it's a way for you to kind of filter out the announcements you don't want to hear.
Mute speech, button.
You can mute speech and mute the announcements.
Search places within radius of 25 meters, adjustable.
So I've got this set to 25 meters. Now, what this basically means is it will announce places within 25 meters. This, again, will help to decrease some of the announcements that the app does when you're walking. The higher the radius, the more places it will announce for you, which is something you may want or you may not want. So you can adjust this as you wish.
My places, search.
Now you are in categories. This is where you've got different categories that you can tap on, and it will show you places with these categories only. So I've got my places, so places that you have favorited. These can be both places you've created or maybe places that you have added as favorites from the Foursquare function.
Local info, search.
Then you've got
actions available. Local info, search.
Then you've got different categories.
Shared places, search. Arts and entertainment, search. College and university, search. Food, search. Nightlife spot, outdoors and recreation, professional and other places, residence, search. Shop and service, travel and transport, voice command, button.
So you've got lots of different categories then. If you tap into each category, near the bottom you'll get also subcategories to kind of refine your searches a little bit. Then you've got voice commands. Blind Square does support voice commands. I've never used them myself, so I'm not really sure exactly what you can do.
Help, button.
Again, the help section's there.
Accuracy, 10.9 meters.
Then there's the GPS accuracy, which is 9 meters, which is quite surprising considering we are indoors, which usually means that the GPS accuracy will not be that good.
Sleep mode, switch button,
sleep,
off.
sleep mode, that will completely silence Blind Square's announcements.
Sleep mode.
And that's really it for the main part of the app. There's a lot more in the settings page, which you can explore if you wish. And you can dive into all sorts of details as to exactly how Blind Square will work for you personally and make sure it gives you the right information in the right ways. So that's one thing. Now, what I want to show you today is one feature I particularly use. So Blind Square has many features. You can, for example, track destinations. So if you're walking to a specific place, the closer you get to it, the more alerts you will get as to how close it is. So you know you're getting closer, for example. That's one feature that people certainly use quite a lot. The feature I'll show you today is called location simulation, or simulating locations, and one I use a lot for planning weekend getaways. So in effect, what this does is what it says on the tin. It will allow you to simulate a particular location and put you as if you are at that location and allow you to explore through the app from that location. So if I, for example, in a few weeks, I'm heading over to Portsmouth for the weekend and, you know, I want to know what's nearby. So what I'm going to do in a minute is search the hotel I'm staying in. So what I'm going to do in a minute is search out a place in Portsmouth and then simulate it and see what's nearby.
Search my place. Search places within mute. Other first tool. Add search button.
So I'll go into the search function.
Search. Give a search term. Braille screen input. Premier. Inn. Portsmouth. Premier in Portsmouth City Centre Hotel. Hotel. Phone. Tips, 106 kilometers at 9 o'clock.
So I found this particular hotel. Now, I'm going to be down south, as I mentioned, in a few weeks. So let's double tap on this place.
Show on map. Button. Simulate this location.
This
button.
Is what we need. Let's double tap.
Simulate. My places.
So I have now
your simulated location is 106 kilometers southwest of your current location.
There we go. So it said how far my location is simulated to the current location. And what we can do, in effect, now is basically browse places as if we are near that location. So to give you an example.
Local info. Shared place. Arts and enter. College and university. Food. Search.
Let's say I want to go and eat somewhere near my hotel, and I want to find a nice place.
Select. Back. Button.
So I've tapped on food, and it's now found us some food places I can look at where I can go for a meal.
Time. Portsmouth. Food. Phone. Otaku Sushi. Portsmouth, Japanese restaurant phone, 60 meters at 11 o'clock. Natty's Shack, Portsmouth, Caribbean restaurant tips, 65 meters at 1 o'clock.
It turns out I'm actually going there, so let's double tap.
Back, Natty's Shack, edit, dim, category is food, Caribbean restaurant. Check-in, button, favorite, check-in, button.
So you can check in. Now, if you've ever used the Swarm platform, which used to be part of Foursquare, which it kind of still is, but they are two separate apps. You can actually check into venues and earn points and stuff. But that's, I don't really do that these days, but you can do so if you wish.
Favorite, switch button, off.
You can favorite places, and then they'll be appear in the My Places category to make them easier to find.
Start tracking, button.
Start tracking. This is where it will track the destination, and the closer you get to it, the more frequently it will update you so you know you're getting closer.
Plan a route. Button.
This will allow to open a third-party navigation app, whether it's Apple Maps or Google Maps, and you can actually get directions to the place. And what's good about that is you can have both Google or Apple Maps giving you directions to the venue, while Blind Square tells you your surroundings. Having both of these apps working together can make it for quite a decent experience while traveling, especially when walking and exploring places specifically. You get that bit more detail because you get two different types of detail.
Public transport. Button.
Public transport. You can look at public transport directions. Fairly self-explanatory.
Uber in 2 minutes. £6. Button.
You can even get an Uber there.
Old Zurich Car Park. Commercial Road. Portsmouth. Address.
There's the address.
Share this place. Button. Give feedback. Button. www. Button.
This should take you to the website of the place. It's not always up to date, though, so keep that in mind.
Tips 2. Button.
You can look at tips people have left.
Google, button, weather, button, find similar places, button, show on map, button, simulate this location, set correct location, button.
So this is interesting. Sometimes on these sorts of apps, locations of places may not be correct. And you can actually use your own phone's location, if you are near that place, to set the correct location if you feel it is incorrect.
Previous, button, 65, next, help, help, button.
And that, pretty much, is the short version of what Blind Square can do. The app is a bit more detailed than that, and you can use it for a few more things, but in a nutshell, these are Blind Square's main features. One of the other things I use it a lot for is tracking bus stops when I'm on the bus, in a sense that I select a bus stop. If I go back from town to my house, I select the bus stop that I want near my home, and I will get Blind Square to track it. And when I get closer, I listen out for the distances more and more. And if the distance is, you know, fairly close, by 200 meters, I will then press a button on the bus to then get the bus to stop. And the way I'll know about it is because Blind Square will inform me. Do you use Blind Square? Have you used it in the past? What do you use now? Have you changed since? Is there a reason you're still sticking to Blind Square over the other apps that exist that do a similar thing? All these questions, we're always keen to hear from you, so let us know. That email address, of course, as always, is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And, well, that's another episode of Tech Talk. What did you think? Any comments? You know, have you used Blind Square? Would you like to use a smart mirror? There's something this interesting there. What are your thoughts? Let us know what you think of what you've heard. Or, in fact, you might have another question for us. Well, we are here for you. We want to hear it. As always, you can get in touch with the show. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. For now, though, from myself, Hubert Pavelkovich, and Jackie Brown, goodbye.
Bye until next time.
Bye-bye.